Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball. And live to tell about it. It's Flagrant.
All right. Our guy Kyle and Jim Pete back tomorrow, it sounds like, on Flagrant House. Here we got the sports dad Judd in on this Timberwolves lifestyle podcast. I was in the building. You were in the building a couple nights ago for that Bulls game. I was in the building last night. Nobody bugged Glenn Taylor again.
No.
You know, he came out there with his little radar. Security and he, you know, I ran into him in the back hallway. We did not speak.
I hope you said hi.
I don't think he knows who I am, but if he did, I think he would probably hate me because I've just been ripping him for like 15 years. But
he might not. No booze. He might not care.
Yeah, he seems like he's just kind of Teflon, you know. But there was, like you said, there was at least one person that yelled, "Sell the team, Glenn." I didn't even hear that. Two and a half hours,
and that was before the game started, and it was just a lone voice. I was like, this whole thing is, and you know what? I will say this. Good on the fans for appearing to just enjoy, as Mike Tice once said, the season.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing you can do about it. Now, does it cause some concerns? Absolutely does eventually, right? But when you're having this type of season and that building is electric right now, I'm almost glad that the fan base is like, okay, for now, screw this. This team's so much fun to watch.
It does kind of feel that way, right? I was talking to a few people there at Target Center just... You know, it's the first time I've been in the building since the bombs dropped, the press release from Glenn Taylor and then the A-Rod and Laurie stuff. And I think the consensus is for now that both sides went public, both sides went nuclear. And there's even some buzz that maybe the league stepped in at some point this weekend behind the scenes and was like, you know, why don't you guys shut the hell up for a minute? Yeah. Because A, you're the Timberwolves, and B, this is a lead into the playoffs and we don't need this being in the headlines every single day. So I think we're going to get kind of a calm period here.
I think you're exactly right. I think you are right. And I also think that it helps that it is the Wolves. Cause like, if this had been the Lakers or something, it would have just taken off, right? Like a wildfire. I think you're right. I think the league said, guys, look, you're not helping yourself on either side. So we'll sort this out, but yeah, let this play out. But you know what? Wolves fans deserve to have this enjoyment. They really do.
Yeah, and the arena once again was just one of the big differences. I feel like if we're being self-reflective and honest here as Minnesota sports fans and media, there's a certain Minnesota sports fan anxiety that kicks in if your team starts to lose in a big game or like the adversity starts to mount. There's this, oh, here we go again feeling because we've been through so much the last 30 years or so. It feels like the opposite inside Target Center these days. Last night, again, they were down by like double digits in the first half. The Rockets are one of the hottest teams. They won 11 straight games before finally Dallas put an end to their multi-week winning streak. They're climbing up the standings, trying to get into the play-in. And man, now they have a double-digit lead. They got these young players. They're finally figuring it out. And instead of the fans kind of sinking into their seats like, oh man, that Bulls loss, and now here we go again. It's that feeling of dread. Fans started to try and will the team to jump back into the game.
Chicago game, same way.
Dude, yeah, like the like Bulls game, they're, same way. They're down by 10 or 12, and fans start getting on their feet and like, come on, guys. Yep. Come on. We know it's in there.
Yep. No, that's exactly how the Bulls game, in which they did come back, that's exactly how that game was. The other thing, too, though, that I think is at least the recent vintage defeats for this team, I never watch them and think, well, that's some awful basketball. They've given up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you fall down. I mean, first of all, in this league, if you're down by 10, it's not that much. But second of all, like that Bulls game, I don't know about you. I didn't think like that was some type of terrible performance where they didn't show up. They just got beat and they didn't play great. But I mean, it's an 82 game season. There's a difference between feeling like you're being ripped off if you paid for a ticket and your team competing and losing because you're going to lose games.
Yeah, they showed up sometimes. And it's not like they played perfectly against the Bulls, and they certainly didn't play perfectly in the first half against the Rockets the first quarter. But they show this level of fight. And actually, that brings me to my first observation here. We did Judd's Wolves observations 2 days ago. We're going to do Phil's Wolves observations here. Observation number one, the Wolves have become so much better at handling adversity. Now, it could be micro adversity. You're down by 10 in the first quarter of this game against the Rockets. It could be macro adversity, which is the season is frustrating last year, and instead of us overcoming it, let's start punching each other and punching walls and early exit, right? Or in this case, wow, billionaires are slinging insults at each other all across the media, national media, local. How are we going to respond? I don't know. We'll read the headlines, shrug our shoulders, start watching film, and go beat the Nuggets and go beat the Rockets. Almost beat the Bulls. But whether it's overcoming double-digit deficits early in games, and Kyle Anderson said, and we'll get to him, by the way, the Kyle Anderson game last night, trademark that. Mm-hmm. He said, last year, some of these games where we're down by like 10 or 12 points in the first half, it would have been over. It would have just been a 20-point loss, or like we would have just gotten in our heads or started arguing with each other. Their ability to adjust strategy on the fly, and I know, again, they lost the game against the Bulls, but Chris Finch even said, yeah, we actually just kind of had the wrong game plan in the first half, and we made an in-game adjustment here and there, and voila, all of a sudden now we're back and we're fighting in this game.
Yep.
The other thing, I don't know what the exact percentage is today. The last time I looked at this, it was last week. The Wolves have the largest percentage of games of any team in the NBA in which they have won when trailing after three quarters. Now, they erased the lead, and they were leading going into the fourth quarter last night, but just like the ability to handle adverse moments. You're trailing in the first half. Another team is punching you. Your owners are fighting. Whatever it is, can you rise above it and still win a big game? And, man, the answer is yes, so much more this year than in 20 years of Timberwolves basketball.
Don't you think that's also in large part because there is a belief now? Like the Wolves, I think once you start to win games like that, and I mean, this is a league of comebacks, but once you start to set the foundation of that you can win games like that, I think there's a brashness. It's not a cockiness because it's not like being cocky, but there's a brashness of we've got this.
It's and a self-assuredness. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say, I think the absolute key, and I'm sure we'll talk about, is shooting not being great of late. I think the absolute key is you've such a glue guy in Ant. And Ant is the guy. There's two types of attempted alphas, in my opinion, in life. There's the guy at work who when you start your job, assures you he knows exactly what's up and that he's got this, but he really doesn't. And so it's like, if you're young, it's like,
oh, hop my. On my back, everyone. Yeah.
You know, no, I know what I'm doing.
Bob,
I'll do
the coffee room's on fire right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, you're an idiot. And you're dangerous because I believed you. But then there's a guy like Ant, who, even if he's not playing well, has a cockiness. And he really, like, things can be going sideways. The coffee room can be burning up, but he's got it still.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't made a three-pointer in a week, but I'm still going to throw down three monster dunks to ice the game in the fourth quarter and play lockdown defense. Yeah.
And look at his box scores. He's still contributing. The Bulls game rebounds. He's still contributing. Yeah. Like, but, I mean, he has that self-assuredness that I think feeds a roster.
Well, that's a good segue into observation number two. And we will, by the way, give some love to a couple of bench players that deserve love. But my second observation is, If Ant isn't worried, I'm not really worried. So he literally hasn't hit a three-pointer in a week. He's 0 for his last 20-something on three-point attempts. I like your theory. The more that I sort of watch, and I was running your theory by a couple other people too in Wolves Media Row, and like, yeah, the Judd theory on his, it's not his shooting hand, which is why he can still go out there and play and get shots up, but... Right. He literally dislocated a finger on that crazy dunk against Utah on his guide hand, and his shot just looks it looks flat. It just looks a little off.
Yep.
And after the game, he said, "I know what the issue is, and by the time the playoffs come, this is I'm getting it out of the way now." And he didn't confirm your theory, by the way, but he said he knows what the problem is. I didn't get. Long story short, I was planning on going to the locker room, but I had the
while.
I had the wrong kind of credential, and it would have.
Okay, all right. I thought you might have said Ant, Phil Mackey, score north.
No, I will. I plan on being in there for some playoff games and stuff. Okay. I didn't get a chance to ask him that question face to face, but he said by the time the playoffs get here, that 3-point shot's going to be butter. So don't worry about it. But to your point too, it's like, okay, he's 0 for his last week shooting threes. Well, he gets to the free throw line 11 times last night. Goes 11 for 11 from the free throw line. Yep. He starts going to the rim. He throws down a couple huge dunks. He's picking pockets on defense. He still finds a way to make a positive impact on the box score and on the result of the game.
And after the Bulls loss, he tried to say that it's his legs are sort of shot, and I'm not buying that. Could he be tired? Sure. Do I think his legs are the reason why he has not hit in the last three games? Just as a sample size, he's 0 for 19 on threes. That's why I think it's something different. But I also, I'm with you. I believe that by the time the playoffs start, he'll be absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh my God, he's not shooting well. And is this going to be a month long slump? I'm not buying that either.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
But the scary thing for the rest of the Western Conference is, let's go back to that Denver game for a second, because I want to get it right. They blew the doors off the defending champions inside that building. Now, of course, Denver didn't have Jamal Murray, but the Wolves didn't have Cat. So, okay, let's take each team's second best offensive player out, and now it should be even. Plus, the Nuggets are playing at home.
Sure.
And Anthony Edwards and Naz Reid went a combined 0 for 13 from three-point land. Naz Reid went 2 for 12. Anthony Edwards clearly not playing up to his full offensive potential. And they had a 23 or 25-point lead in the second half on the defending champions. That is really interesting. That this team, and we've seen it a lot over the last couple months, where they're just not quite playing. When they play their top level of basketball, I think they're the best team in the Western Conference. We could debate about Boston on the Eastern side. But the scary thing is, because you're not always going to play at your peak level. You're going to have a lot of nights where you're playing at like your 80th percentile or 75th percentile. Can you still win those games decisively? And the answer has been yes in a lot of these games against actual contenders in the West. So, okay, observation number three for you. I saw all your little tweets, not yours, but you people in the audience, okay? Your comments on the Score North YouTube channel, Flagrant Howls episode. A lot of you folks wanted Kyle Anderson gone at the trade deadline.
Oh, yeah.
Get him out of here. He's a malcontent at the end of last year. He's, you know, he's gone from slow-mo to really slow-mo. Now he can't even get a three-point shot off.
Royce was mocking him.
Yes.
I think he called him
slow-mo.
No-mo.
No-mo?
No-mo at one point.
All you people were wrong. Wrong about Kyle Anderson. So last night, I'm calling it the Kyle Anderson game. We should put it on some t-shirts. We should sell some merch. 13 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks, even knocked down a three-pointer late in the game. He knocked down 2 three-pointers. One was just after the buzzer rang, I think, in the first half.
I love his three.
Takes
his
a form, half hour to get it off.
His form on the three is awesome. Yes, that's exactly how it looks.
And since the trade deadline, he has been a completely different. I mean, he's been much more like the player that we saw last year, the Swiss Army knife that you can put in different positions on offense, defense. And Chris Finch, after the game, was asked about, I think it was Dane Moore that asked him, you know, hey, Kyle was kind of struggling at times early in the season. There were some rumblings at the trade deadline. You know, what led to you maintaining confidence in Kyle Anderson? And Finch said, well, I try to have confidence in all my guys, right? But then he said, Kyle saved our season last year. He was, in many ways, our most important player on last year's team. He essentially said that team does not squeak into the playoffs without the 82 games, or I don't know if you, I can't remember how many games you play, but like the 82 game season of Kyle Anderson. And he is much closer to that player, if not even like equal to that player now compared to 2 or 3 months ago before the trade deadline. And last night was the coronation of 2024 Kyle Anderson. It was, at one point he put like a fast break Euro step on a defender. The defender like,
I
like fell to his knees, and Kyle gave like a Michael Jordan shrug as he
his appealed to the crowd. Are great too. His facial expressions are hilarious. Do you think, this might sound crazy, but do you think that there's a case to be made, like internally, he's the captain of that team in some ways?
I think he's the co-captain. I think the Timberwolves have, it's been a while since Kyle and I have done the leadership power rankings.
Oh, see, I didn't know you guys did that. Okay, yeah,
we should. I think the last time we did leadership power rankings was like before the season. I'm going to give you impromptu leadership power rankings right now.
Because Ant often does refer to what Kyle told. I mean, Kyle sounds like he kicks Ant in the ass as much as Conley, if not more.
Yeah, I still think, so I'm, I should run this by Kyle and Jim Pete tomorrow too. So this is a good exercise.
All right, let's go.
I still think Mike Conley is number one in the leadership power rankings. He's not always as maybe boisterous or verbose, but in terms of just like, being a general on the floor. So you, how many times do you see him sitting right next to Ant on the bench during a timeout, and he's got his hand on Ant's knee, like telling him something, basketball parenting him, if you will.
Pros pro.
Yep. So Mike Conley's number one. I think you're right. I think Kyle Anderson's number two.
Okay.
So we'll put slow-mo number two.
Interesting.
A guy that I don't know would have been in the top three a year ago or a year and a half ago. I think this team, now that D'Lo's been gone for a while, you get D'Lo out of here, who was just kind of skeptical about Rudy Gobert and kind of clowned him to the media. And you bring in Mike Conley for validation, a better connection. I think Rudy Gobert has risen into this top three. He's a defensive head coach, basically, out there. He's like the defensive coordinator and, by the way, the best defensive player in the league.
Yep.
Teammates respect him. They're feeding him. You look at some of his recent offensive performances, like his teammates are hunting for him, and the X's and O's. I mean, I lean on guys like Dane and, you know, Jake Painting, Howls and Growls, who are much better with basketball X's and O's. But Chris Finch alluded to this, too. The Rockets essentially started switching everything in that game. And some of the players in the locker room are like, what's the solution when smaller lineups are just switching everything and it's harder for you guys to run pick and roll and things? And the answer a lot of times is feed Rudy. You know, if they're going to switch everything, oh, there's a smaller guy on Rudy, like have him roll to the hoop, boom, all of a sudden he's catching the ball 10 feet from the hoop.
Yep.
So he's been a key part to breaking some of these smaller defenses too. So I'm going to go Rudy. Anthony Edwards is fourth. Who's fifth? Jordan McLaughlin has been a real nice, quiet addition here. Naz Reid, not a vocal leader necessarily, but a great leader by example.
Right.
I don't know that, I'm not trying to dunk on Carl here, but I don't know that the team, even when he's healthy, I don't know that Carl cracks the top four in terms of a guy that's leading this collection, right? Everyone rally around me for a second. I think he's a really good sort of complimentary piece who happens to average 20 and 10. Yeah.
He's best when he's worrying about what his role is, not when he's trying to galvanize the team.
I've seen Monte Morris step up a little bit too in last. I would say it's a solid group of four here, and I don't know that we need to go any further on this exercise. Mike Conley, Kyle Anderson, Rudy Gobert, Anthony Edwards are your four main leaders of this thing.
All right, it's a good list. It's a good list. I'm with you on Gobert. Gobert just seems, and it's not surprising, but my God, he seems so comfortable now. And like a year ago, everything felt clunky with him.
Yeah.
Like he literally felt like he had transferred high schools and he just wasn't
Didn't know anyone sitting
like
at the
cool kids were like, no, table. Man, you can't sit with us. No, go over. And he finally cracked it. And look, I mean, against the Bulls, he had a couple of really nice dunks and plays where he just goes crazy. Now he starts pounding his chest and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that's, guys feed off that.
Dude, last night he had a reverse dunk at one point. He had Anthony Edwards got pretty deep into the lane, saw that there was 19 defenders in his face, and so he just like kind of threw a blind lob up. He's like, I think Rudy is somewhere on the other side of these three defenders. He just like threw ball up. And it wasn't the most accurate lob, but Rudy is a gigantic praying mantis. And so Rudy reaches back, grabs it with one arm, and just throws down a one-arm alley-oop. Mm-hmm. So, by the way, there was the last few days in the Twin Cities, there's a French TV production crew that came to town and they're working on two different things, I guess, that are going to air on like Paris TV stations and other French speaking media outlets on Friday night. One is a Rudy Gobert profile. So they came in, they sat down with Rudy, but the other one is just talking to Timberwolves fans. There's a huge interest in France with Rudy and now with the Timberwolves. And they even came into our studios at the Score North studios and they sat down and talked to the Flagrant House, to me and Ross, and took some stuff from Flagrant House. They were filming the arena last night when the Wolves were making the comeback. And
well, that's cool.
So they're like documenting Rudy with the Timberwolves and the Timberwolves reaching this peak moment for the first time in 20 years. So yeah, he's just, a year ago, everybody was unsure. Everybody. And God, I was talking to somebody else last night too, behind the scenes. Tim Connelly had to sit there for like 12 months, more than that. Cause the whole season, everyone's questioning. And then the second season doesn't start until like October. So, and he made the trade in July, right? So Tim Connelly sat there for 15 months, listening to people on microphones, on keyboards, on prominent social media.
Prominent people.
Yes, Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically say this is one of the worst trades in the history of the NBA, if not the history of the four major men's team sports. This is the Herschel Walker trade.
Right.
What was Tim Connelly thinking? Why would he come in here and make a trade like this? Was he sent by the Nuggets to sabotage the Timberwolves? This is going to go down as an epic franchise folding trade, right? Like he had to sit in his office for 15 months and listen to that. And I don't know. I wonder, I've never gotten a chance to ask him, but like, did he ever waver? Was there ever a moment where even he was thinking, damn it. I thought I had a pretty good read on this roster building thing after 10 years with the Nuggets, but now he's seeing it play out the way that he envisioned, I'm sure, back in July of summers ago.
So I don't know, like, if you make that trade, I don't know that he would have necessarily wavered a ton, but you would be pissed off by a couple of things. One is Gobert showed up hurt or certainly fatigued for his first year here, which doesn't help things.
Yeah.
Which would have pissed me off. I mean, it pissed me off, and I'm Judd. I'm not Tim Connelly. The other thing is, you know, it's amazing now with what they've done as far as making sure that Gobert had a role, his role, like a year ago, like to go back to the points, the advanced metrics that you brought up about combinations, you know, Cat and Gobert, Nas and Gobert was awful. And then the other transitional factor that you can't doubt is, and perhaps Conley knew he was going to do this at some point, was exchanging D'Lo for Mike Conley.
Yeah. And like, Nikhil Alexander Walker. Like, yeah.
But you had D'Lo, you know, privately mocking the guy.
Yep. Yeah. So toxic. It felt toxic. And
it was toxic. It was
good for D'Lo's playing largely some great basketball with the Lakers and great for him. But Conley and Nikhil, I'd take either one of those guys individually over D'Lo for this team in terms of fit. The fact that you get both of them in your rotation is completely ridiculous.
Am I the only one that's slightly bugged, though, by one fact? That the fact that fans still, which this is fine, they stand until the Wolves score their first basket is a D'Lo thing?
I kind of hate that it's a D'Lo thing, but I love that we have some sort of fun tradition now.
But I hate it. Like he's the one, like this guy who didn't do jack here is the one that called, you know, you dead ass fans.
Quiet ass fans. Yeah.
Quiet ass fans. He wasn't wrong. No, he wasn't wrong. But I'm saying I don't like, I wish it had come from somebody that was respected here.
Yeah. You know, maybe Mike we can Conley come up with that? Something else.
If Mike Conley had done that, it'd be like, yeah, this is awesome. I'm just saying D'Lo of all people.
Yeah, no, I get it. I that's his greatest gift, I think. Two great gifts, to give him credit, because he was instrumental in bringing the Wolves from like 20-some wins to 40 or whatever. And so you need certain players to do that. And he was instrumental in creating a new fun thing at Target Center.
But he is also the guy who is directly, I mean, if there was one guy that can be identified as being directly responsible for Gobert transferring in from Bayside to here and being told you can't sit with us, it was him.
Bayside, a little Saved by the Bell.
Yep.
Like it. I have another observation or two here in our final minutes, but just a quick shout out to our friends over at First Equity Mortgage. So if you're looking for a home or if you're looking to refinance, so for me, I had a great experience refinancing my home at the time, like 7 years ago with David over at First Equity. And David is a 20-year Wolves and Lynx season ticket holder. So they're he's definitely one of us, so to speak, in terms of riding that roller coaster. Not only did I have a great experience with First Equity, but First Equity has handled home loans or refinances for 20 of my friends and or coworkers after doing a count. They work fast. They have a great reputation in the Twin Cities and in the industry. And they also offer programs for veterans and for new home buyers if you qualify. Go to femort.com. That's femort.com. Or scorenorth.com, keyword David, to find out more. Okay, another observation here. Jordan McLaughlin has become one of the most important bench players once again for the Timberwolves. He was very important for chunks in his career, especially the first half of last year. Then the calf injury, he just wasn't the same player after the calf injury. Most notably, teams leaving him wide open in the corner and just daring him to shoot threes and he couldn't make one. He was a plus 17 in 18 minutes last night. And he's always been a great organizer, backup point guard, just a guy that gets you into the offense, gets the ball moving around. Like, he understands how to stir the drink. But now he's shooting 51% from three-point range on the season. 3 of 4 last night. And after the game, Chris Finch mentioned that he's actually one of the... So they track 50-50 ball stats. They've got some sort of... I don't know if it's like a manual tracking system or... if it's analytically produced, but however the Wolves track it, he mentioned that Jordan McLaughlin is one of the best at corralling 50-50 balls. So like, oh, there's like a loose ball or whatever. Like, he's great at corralling it and starting a fast break the other way, or just restarting the offense if it's a loose ball on offense. So Jordan McLaughlin, man, like 15 minutes off the bench here and there, 15, 20 minutes, a great organizer. So they essentially have 3 point guards now that they can lean on: Mike Conley, Monte Morris, and Jordan McLaughlin. All of them can knock down threes now, if this is the trend now with Jordan McLaughlin. And you can put him out there with Anthony Edwards, who can handle the ball. So they're in a really good spot with guys who can handle the ball. Kyle Anderson can handle the ball as kind of a point forward too. So just giving some love to, this is a Jordan McLaughlin appreciation observation here.
I was done with him last year too.
Yeah.
At the end of last year, I'm like, you can't keep him. So like as far as the slow-mo hate goes, I wasn't as on board with that. Full disclosure, with Jordan at the end of last season, I was 100% done. So
yeah. Yeah, a lot. I never quite got on board with like the trade Kyle for sure movement. I really was skeptical about that. But yeah, I was on board with you can't have Jordan McLaughlin playing 15 minutes anymore if he can't knock down a three. But to his credit, he is a different player.
So his leg was gone.
Hmm?
Like his leg was because of the calf.
Yeah,
leg was probably gone.
And he wasn't like a great 3-point shooter really at any point in his 3 years before this. So it's a bit of a small sample size, but the shot looks smooth. He's clearly been told and understands if you want to stay in the NBA, you got to knock down these corner threes. And then one final observation here, because we got to go record some Write That Down sessions. I love Chris Finch. So Chris, he's the most unfazed guy, the least phased guy, right? All this stuff is happening in the organization and he just shows up. He's like the sitcom dad of the NBA. You can hear like the laugh track in the background when he cracks his little one-liners.
Yeah.
And after the game, so he does his media session and there's like a press conference room in the bowels of Target Center. But then there's like a media room where the writers kind of go across the hallway and they hack out their stories. Right.
Sure.
So he does his media session and there was some pizza in the media room for the working media. And he just kind of wanders into the I wasn't in there when this happened, but I guess he just kind of wandered into the media workroom and just ate a couple slices of pizza with the media.
Pizza and beer. I wonder if he got a beer.
I don't know if he cracked a beer or not. But yeah, he just hanging out, eating a couple slices of pizza as we wind down the regular season. Just, hey, guys, how's your story coming along there, huh? Johnny K, how you guys doing over there?
How uncomfortable would Chris have been if he had coached pre-pandemic and had to wear a suit and tie every game?
Can you imagine him with like Pat Riley slick back hair?
If you were to isolate on him and show it to a basketball fan who didn't know who the coaches in this league were, I think 9 out of 10 responses would be he's either a college coach or a high school coach.
I could see college. Yeah, I could see college.
But I mean, he always looks so put upon by the kids, to your point. Like he's like, it's a perfect look for a coach, but it does not look like an NBA coach, which is what I think is great about him.
I could see him coaching, you know, like some Atlantic 10 school
Saint
or something.
Thomas. I could like see him coaching St. Thomas. Oh, these kids are driving me nuts and I got to teach theology tomorrow.
Yeah. So he'll get some love for coach of the year. I haven't seen the latest odds, but yeah, Finchie just unfazed, man. Unfazed through.
Great.
Through all this. So, all right, that's a wrap on this episode of Flagrant Howls. We'll talk to Jim Pete, we hope, tomorrow on the podcast. For Sports Dad, I'm Phil Mackey. This is a Timberwolves Lifestyle Podcast.